Yoga Vashishtha, Part 10 by Swami Suryadevananda. Prayer before study. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings, whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. The last time we covered a core topic of the Yoga Vashishtha, the seven planes of wisdom, and we covered these in two ways, first in three groups, and then towards the end as a sort of summary, we covered them individually. This is what our study looked like when we went over them in three groups. First, we covered Shubhichcha, which is a noble wish. Then, in the second phase, we covered Vicharana, which is direct and steady observation of the mind, Tanumanasi, which is the thinned and weakened mind, and Sattvapatti, which is a natural turning away from sense pleasure and dwelling in the truth. We covered them together. And lastly, we covered these three, Asamshakti, which is a natural and total non-attachment of freedom, Padhartha Bhavani, which is a natural cessation of objectivity, and Turiya, which is liberated while living. Then, as a sort of summary, we covered each individually to bring out their main points. Let us once again review them, just so that the essence of these teachings sinks in. The first is a noble wish or Shubhichcha. When one clearly sees the danger in leading an unexamined life, one has given up any and all craving for pleasure as well, and one aspires for what is good and lasting. This is called a noble wish or Shubhichcha. Ongoing inquiry or Vicharana. When the mind is directly observed without remission, it is also called the practice of inquiry or direct observation into the nature of reality or Vicharana. The subtle mind or Tanumanasi. When there arises a natural disinterestedness in the pleasure of the senses, it is true non-attachment based on intelligent discrimination. The mind is weakened and it becomes subtle and transparent, or Tanumanasi. When the first three are sincerely practiced, there arises in the seeker a natural turning away from sense pleasure and a natural dwelling in truth. This resultant purity or sattva at the heart is called sattvapatti. When the first four are sincerely practiced, there is total non-attachment of freedom and at the same time a conviction in the nature of truth. There is great inner peace and joy independent of external objects and internal mental states. This state of non-attachment or freedom is called Asamshakti. When one rejoices in one's own self, the perception of duality and diversity ceases, and the efforts that one made at the inspiration of others bears fruition In direct spiritual experience, the man of wisdom is aware of objects only if and when he feels compelled to do so. This natural and spontaneous cessation of objectivity is called Padartha Bhavani. Coming to this stage, there is no other support. By persistent practice, the vision of division ceases, and one is fully established in one's own unconditioned being. Self-knowledge is spontaneous, natural, and therefore unbroken. That state is known as liberated even while living here, or Turiya. Our topics today are Yoga, the Way of Purification, Appearances, Reflections in Consciousness, and Reality, the Indivisible Consciousness. Friends, we are now at the end of the third chapter, and the teachings are subtler. It is difficult to find precise and accurate verbiage for the teachings, because like a finger pointing to the moon, the teachings try to point to something that is beyond them also. Still, let us journey together once again and try to feel the finger pointing and its direction. Greetings. Let us start with the first topic for today, which is yoga. Yoga is a way of purification. Our inner conditioning itself is all the agitation that we face in life, because it prevents the experience of our true nature, which is ever peaceful. My friends, this is not theory. It is our direct experience every day. When we go to sleep and have a good night's sound sleep, where conditioning doesn't interfere, we sleep well, we sleep at peace, and we wake up refreshed, and we say, I had a good night's sleep, I'm feeling all refreshed now. What is it about returning? Because we return to a homogeneous condition where this conditioning is not there. Free of our conditioning, we're happy. Sometimes when we go on vacation, we can't wait to go someplace and get away from things. But what do we get away from? We put this turmoil in our mind aside and let the mind be free of it. So we have to ask ourselves, can we not find a way to live that is free of this turmoil? Why does living involve carrying all this baggage? Is it necessary? And we've been discussing this last time on how to go about this. See, my friends, reality is simple. It just is. But our minds are complex. And so our mind looks at its own complexity and is always in conflict with things. The complexity of our mind is all the conflict that we experience in our lives. If we simplify our mind, we simplify our lives, and we make our journey peaceful. Simplifying our mind is neither difficult nor easy. It just takes an awakening for us to know that things as they are not the best state of things. We need to change. Not change things out there, but change the way we function, we look at things. Change the way we perceive, change the way we act, and change the way we respond to things. We've grown too used to our conditioning, and it's begun seeming very natural to us. Whereas our true nature seems like a nice idea, something in theory that is not really very practical. Now, my friends, some say that times have changed, and all this, yoga, religion, everything else, needs to be rethought. Times may have changed, but what we are still talking about is the unchanging entity in us, So where is the need for all of that rethought? What we seek is a return to our unchanged state, our natural state, that has been the same since the beginning of time. It is the same today, and it will always be the same because it is unchanging. When what you seek is unchanging, what needs to be rethought? So the inner dynamics has been and remains the same. Something or someone that is beyond change can know that times are changing. Let times change. Let the outer change. So there are some different ways in which things are done, in which people talk, and in how they go about their things. But who they are hasn't changed. That has never changed. That is the same thing beneath all of that, the unconditioned being. That's why we call it changeless. So to get to the bottom of all this, Yoga Vasishtha asks you to challenge this habit by own direct inquiry. The habit of conditioned perception and conditioned action and its following conditioned experience. To challenge that, to peel back all these layers of conditioning and encounter your own self. The seven states of wisdom that we've discussed the last time are a virtual roadmap for just that, the return to our own nature or the peel back of all of this conditioning. Gradually, our inner nature is restored by purifying the mind of its conditioning, and this is known as yoga. Yoga is a little bit like sculpting. A sculptor does not add on to reveal a statue. He chisels away what does not belong to reveal what he had already seen in his mind's eye or the beauty that he wishes to express. Similarly, yoga is not an add-on of techniques and learning, but it's a way of purification, which is of removing things that obscure or hide one's own true nature. The goal of all these states that we have talked about is the absolute, which we call Brahman, in which there is no I, no you, no this, no that, no soul, no other, no vision of division, no notions of being and non-being. None of these things. Absolute peace, eternal and all good. This reality cannot be described, because to describe it is to deny it. It is neither real nor unreal. It is neither the all nor not the unall, for it is beyond description. It is something that one has to be aware of directly. When one is aware of it is said to pervade all. When this awareness too is transcended, then there is pure peace and nothing else. We now move to the second topic for the day, appearances, which are nothing but reflections and consciousness. We've talked about yoga, a return to our nature. So naturally, this is the second thing in the order of discussion. What do we do about this multiplicity and this diversity of experience that we have? There is experience and there is reality. So let us talk about this experience. Concepts and notions arise in consciousness of their own accord, and they are also reflected in the consciousness of others. There is no harm with concepts and notions arising in the mind at all. But to take them to be real and to act on them is the root of all of our turmoil and chaos that we face in our life. This can and should be avoided. Let the concepts rise. Let these feelings and attitudes or our predispositions in our mind or our conditioning, let it rise. Why should we be concerned about it at all? We should be concerned with what's out there, what we see first, directly. It is possible to directly engage things with the inner perception, to see things for what they are and do what needs to be done as it arises, thereby weakening this entire mechanism of conditioning. These thoughts or concepts that arise have gained momentum and become strong by use. The only way they are going to weaken is by disuse. We have to be strong enough to continually see things as they are, for what they are, and to do what needs to be done in spite of these rising concepts, and let them rise and let them fall. Each time they rise and fall, they weaken because they lose the energy that's infused in them, or residual energy. All the thinking about them in the past has charged them with this residual energy. And each time we let them rise and let them fall, being aware of them but not engaging them, they weaken until they become completely ineffective or without charge. When we face these by forgetting the truth or turning our back on our true nature, there is bondage. These concepts, when we face them and we forget our true nature, we create all kinds of situations and there is bondage. When we lead an examined life, on the other hand, which is to examine everything for what it is as it happens, we are aware of the rise and fall of these concepts or notions along with things as they happen. We can deal with things and let these concepts rise and fall till they exhaust themselves. So being aware of notions as notions or outer conditioning, we can do what needs to be done. This takes a little bit of practice, and as we have spoken earlier, simplifying our life so that we are doing one thing at one time and doing it well and doing it wholeheartedly because it needs to be done is key or pivotal to breaking through these shackles of conditioning. Thus, we can gradually weaken the entire accumulation of conditioning by disuse. But the key thing is we have to be excited about engaging the present conditions with the inner intelligence instead of habitual conditioning. We have to be very clear that this is what we are setting out to do. So we are now coming gradually to the close of the third chapter. Let us bring some of what we've covered earlier into focus right now so that we can look at them in some broad steps and not scattered pieces of wisdom that we have talked about. Firstly, my friends, there must be a real awakening to do this. All these things sound like theory to one who hasn't awakened, who hasn't seen the danger in following the course as they are. Status quo should not be an option at all. So when there is this awakening, and an awakening is a little different from a mere stirring that comes in our life from time to time, situationally. Sometimes when things don't go our way, we turn around and look for a better way. But that is a stirring because it's caused by a situation. It's not caused by examining things. And awakening is caused by examining things. This stirring is caused by situations when things don't go well, we look for a better way. That is a stirring. It's not an awakening. An awakening is proactive. We've been looking at things for a while, and things as they are, or the course as it is not tenable anymore. It is then that we look for a better way, not to do, but to be. We look at changing who we are, the center of gravity of who we are, from the conditioned to the awakened. The main cause of leading an examined life is to see the defects in responding with mechanical living. Until we see that, it's not going to come about. So that's the first thing to wake up from conditioned living. Having awoken, we come to the second thing. We have to stay awake. So on awakening, we see the danger in living an unexamined life, and we start leading an examined life. But we have to stay the course. And this staying the course of the examined life is called staying awake. Along with all of our spiritual practices, one needs to return to a simple way of living, an examined way of living, where we do what needs to be done, as it needs to be done, wholeheartedly. This is key to leading an examined life. Dealing with things as they happen, to do what needs to be done on its own merit, wholeheartedly. We take out the I, my, and my preferences, and I wish, and I fear this may happen. I worry this may happen, or I hope that may happen. My friends, that is the center of gravity of all of our tension. It makes sense to get rid of that instead of trying to change things. Trying to change things is like trying to iron out the waves of the ocean. It's an impossible task, never going to happen. It makes sense to simplify our own selves, to be able to look at things with clarity and see things as they are, when they happen, for what they are, and to do what needs to be done. That is simple. The mind that struggles with it is complex. To bring that mind into calibration with things as they are, or into sync with things as they are, is the task of yoga. And as we do this, inner joy, which is natural, begins to rise to the surface when it is not obscured. Just like when the clouds don't hide the sun shines with all its brilliance. It has always been there, but some clouds seem to come in between it and obscure that light. The scattered rays of the mind begin to gather once more, and the mind becomes concentrated. Now let's talk about the third, which is gathering the rays of the mind which are now stable and turning them upon their source in self-inquiry. So it comes down to just these three when it comes down to the nuts and bolts. One is awakening. Two is staying awake. And that staying awake, there is also a gathering of the rays of the mind, because we are not all scattered. And the third is turning these gathered rays of the mind upon themselves to know ourselves by direct self-inquiry or self-realization. We now come to the third and last topic for the day, reality, which is the indivisible consciousness. Let's get back to this topic of simplicity again. We often hear today that life has become very complex. But my friends, how does life become complex? Life is just what it is. Even amidst the complexity, we find people living simple lives. We find simple people. So simplicity exists in complex. Simplicity is always there. Complexity is a choice. We choose to be complex, or we get wrapped up in its incomplexity. But simplicity is our true nature. The nature of reality is oneness, and one is simple. It's the simplest thing. We have become complex, and it is necessary to return to simplicity. Not just outwardly, simplicity in how we live and how we do things, that is important. But simple inwardly. What is this simple inwardly? To have one purpose for life, and to live everything for that one purpose, to bring this idea of oneness into the very foundation of our life. Why do we do things in the first place? There must be a discovery of who we are and a return to that true nature. And everything that we do from morning till night should be able or must be able to contribute to this return to our true nature, which is wholeness, fullness. So there needs to be one clear goal. And having one clear goal, we can live in one way and make all of the activities that we have contribute to one single goal. When we do that, we reduce all inner conflict because we bring focus to our lives. Not having focus in our lives leads to a scattering that we have just talked about. So we need to gather the rays of the mind, and the rays of the mind don't gather by some kind of technique. There has to be a philosophy underlying it first as to a technique, yes, but what are we trying to accomplish? Return to state of oneness that we feel in ourselves first, and then a oneness that we feel with everything, and that oneness turns upon itself to know who it really is, or its self nature. So inquiry and everything else would be a struggle at best if we are not able to gather the rays of the mind. We have to gather the rays of the mind to be able to turn the mind upon itself in self-inquiry. Without first gathering the rays of the mind, self-inquiry, my friends, is just some kind of intellectual activity which is a struggle at best. It doesn't accomplish anything. We have to have capital to buy something. Similarly, we have to have this capital or the mechanism with which we are going to inquire. And that has to be akin or similar to that which it's going to inquire into. So this complex mind has to go, and it has to give way to a simple mind. Inner simplicity coupled with outer simplicity, which is in how we do things and how we engage things, has to be bonded with the glue of earnest sincerity. This is the glue, sincerity, that bonds everything. Our true inner nature, or simple inner nature, a simple way of living, a simple way of looking at things. All this needs to be bonded with a glue, and that glue is sincerity. This will not give the mind any reason to want to run outwardly or outside, and it's only then that conditioning will start to unravel. When the mind stays together for a long time and is deeply observed, our true nature is seen. This true nature is between the seer and the seen. It is direct experiencing itself, which alone is the truth and is infinite or indivisible consciousness. This true nature is devoid of the conditioned mind completely, and we need to be firmly established in that. We are that which remains when the conditioned mind is abandoned. We abandon this conditioned mind in deep sleep, but we are not conscious of it. We need to be conscious of this abandon when this conditioning is abandoned. So conditioning has to be let go, my friends. And all of what we have been talking so far, and the main focus for today, is the mechanism with which we are going to unravel this conditioning. It is by giving up our conditioning that our true nature is seen. The clouds of conditioning have obscured the sun of our true nature for too long, my friends. And our return to truth, our return to our true nature, is the giving up of conditioning, not the accumulating of some knowledge or wisdom. Wisdom is already there, but there is something that hides it. And we have to challenge ourselves and ask ourselves if we are ready to let go of that which obscures. And it comes down to that, finally. So, my friends, let us briefly summarize the 3 points that we have talked about today. First, we talked about yoga. Yoga is a way of purification, and you are the means, not something else. So simplify your life, simplify your mind, and cultivate your own self as the means. The second point we talked about is appearances. These appearances are reflections in consciousness. There is no harm in these appearances. But to get caught up in appearances and lose track of reality, which is things as they are, is a problem. So lead an examined life. Do what needs to be done, as it needs to be done, wholeheartedly. Which means, because it needs to be done, on its own merit. And my friends, we spoke about 3 things that are most helpful in this. 1 is an awakening, 2 is staying awake, and 3 is self-inquiry. Lastly, we talked about reality. Reality is the indivisible consciousness. When the mind stays together naturally for a long time and is deeply observed, one's true nature is gradually seen. Today, we have concluded with the important teachings of the 3rd chapter. Next time, we begin with the 4th chapter. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF summary, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.